Well, the political provocateur that is Shane Jones is with us today. Hey, Shane, how are we?
Morena, morena.
Morena. Well, let's start with what the best things that have happened for our people via your hand has been this week, Shane.
You want me to break the rule about the kumara doesn't talk about its own sweetness?
Yeah, well, yes, you can. It's campaign mode.
Well, funnily enough, despite the negative perceptions about my leadership in fisheries, I recently took a proposal to Cabinet and we announced yesterday that we would be closing down fisheries around parts of the South Island to save the hoihoi penguin, which has surprised everyone because I've been caricatured as some sort of anti-nature, anti-green sort of character. I'm a balanced individual. So for all of the listeners out there who love all the furry things, the hoihoi penguin is quite a bit safer in terms of fishing nets. So there you go, Emala.
Tēnā koe. Well, encouraging. And somewhat surprising. How did it come to be? And when you say you've closed down the fisheries, what have you created a marine reserve in these areas, Shane, and where are they?
Oh, no, hell, I haven't lost the plot quite that extent, creating unnecessary marine reserves. No, what happened is at Ngāi Tahu, and the scientific community have pointed out that the hoihoi penguin has got a declining population. It suffers all sorts of depredations, not only danger around fishing nets, but also the problems associated with land-based threats. And could be there's some sort of māuiui, some sort of illness on these birds. But anyhow, the Cabinet has signed off the suggestion that we take a very precautionary approach, which is disappointing, not surprisingly, for the men and women who earn their fishing livelihoods down there. But it was difficult to overlook the mortal threat posed from a number of sources to this particular manu. Dale?
Tēnā koe. Thanks for the update. Hey, Shane, there's been some contrasting commentary on the use to our nation of huge hyperscale AI data centres. You know that they draw huge amounts of energy. They'd be overseas owned by the tech giants who really are coming here to profit from our hydro availability, I'd suspect. Now, the government's backing the country's emergence as an AI and data centre hub. Supporters see a huge economic opportunity, but critics questioning whether the jobs and benefits justify the enormous demand on electricity, water and infrastructure. What's your take on all of this, please, Shane?
Oh, look, I've said all along I'm a doubting Thomas as to how much of the storage data storage capacity we need in our country. I don't want to stand in the way of the applicant or the rights that applicant in Murihiku has already secured, because unlike the Labour Party, I don't believe in confiscating people's rights. The reality, however, is that unless we can generate additional electricity, we can't have these big data centres coming here and accelerating the rise or escalating the cost of energy and worsening the circumstances of households and other industries that create more jobs than a data centre.
Tēnā koe. You're big on working men back in the mines of our land. I know that you spoke at the Quarry New Zealand annual conference. Now, can you just again give us your pitch why you believe that there shouldn't be such a strong anti-mining lobby, and why this area of our economic development, including for Māori, is important to you?
Well, I can take you to Kaitaia, I can take you to Tai Rāwhiti, I can take you to the Kaipara, and I'll show you all the Māoris living in Kalgoorlie, Port Hedland, Karratha, Western Australia, digging up Australia. So all of these people who want to sort of sit around stroking Papa Tuanuku and singing Kumbaya and don't want our people to get a job, they're talking to the wrong politician and they're talking to the matua. As far as I'm concerned, the fact that $18 million has been spent by the Santana mining applicant to secure the necessary consents shows how much care and diligence these applicants are placing in front of the various panels. And yeah, look, I know amongst the noisy element of our Māori community, there are people who don't like mining and quarrying, but they are trapped in a form of escapism, and they've allowed their minds to be colonized by all the climate alarmists, and they've become disconnected from the source of our wealth. Where will our nation be without the quarries, the farms, the industries, the fishing boats, the men and women who are tilling the soil? You know, when I grew up, our grandmother taught us an old word up in Taitokero, it's paruauru. Paruauru, and that meant people who make a living out of tilling the soil. Yeah. It means like, there's a song, I used to sing it out when we were kids, put a little bird on your hands, boy. So that's where I'm coming from.
Old school. Get the hard hat on and back down into the deep dark of Papatūānuku. Fuel and supply updates, please. I was at Marsden Point for a birthday over the weekend. Shane saw the big, one of the big solar farms at Ruakaka, but talking with a Sparky guy up there, says there's 3 years of work ahead for them. What's going on at Marsden Point? And how do we buffer ourselves from the geopolitical influences on fluctuating fuel prices that we are subjected to in NZ?
Well, we derive our fuel from Singapore, Korea, and sadly, they derive all of their feedstock from the Middle East. And there are threats to close the Red Sea by a terrorist group called the Houthis. There's the ongoing closure dramas with the Straits of Hormuz, and more recently, a source of feedstock for the broader refineries of the world is coming out of the Black Sea. And that's been blown up as a part of this ongoing conflict associated with the Ukraine. So the difficulty New Zealand has got is that we're going to have to continually pay a higher price, which means we're importing inflation. And we're kind of like a little cork bobbing on a geopolitical ocean. We have the ability to pay. It is hurting. The fuel import companies, they continue to assure us that the supply lines can be managed. But, I mean, we've got also to a point where New Zealand needs to re-engage its mind and start to use the resources I believe exist here with better pockets of information as to geologically what we've got. Then we've got to develop it and exploit it and use it to boost our resilience.
There's a lot of ex-Labor guys heading to NZ First.
Yes. In the light.
Well, I mean, do they add to New Zealand First standing or are they detrimental to it?
Oh, well, you could be referring to Stu Nash.
Well, so, I could be referring to Rino Tidikatne, and I could be referring to David Samuels as well, though, couldn't I?
Well, I can't understand why you would entertain a negative thought about our co-marker, David Samuels. And Rino has joined the party, but he hasn't indicated he wants to stand for politics. Yeah, no, sadly, Stewie sent in his letter of resignation. It wasn't a flash outcome. But, the plane hit some bumpy weather. And, he jumped out. Fortunately, he had a parachute, and he'll live again and continue on with his life in another context.
Tēnākui. Any updates from the fisheries sector this week, Shane?
Well, there's two significant issues that iwi, with their interests in our fisheries sector, need to be mindful of. The ongoing changes to the orange roughy fishery, which is a significant deep sea fishery. They say that the orange roughy fishery market was discovered and developed in America because there used to be a program called Dallas, and Hagman JR ordered New Zealand orange roughy in the 80s on that program, and overnight there was a surge of interest in Orange Roughy. Now, I don't know if that's an urban myth. However, it's a great yarn, but we need to ensure that the sustainability is at the top of our minds. And there's another fish off the coast of the Tairawhiti, Wairarapa, called Tarakihi. And look, we're just moving through a bunch of information streams and consultation to establish if we're going to continue to harvest that fish, at what level should we harvest it. There's always debates as to the quality of the science and all those matters, but under our system, the officials need to amass all that data, create some options, and then the government, at my level, we make a decision as to how there should be a balance struck between industrial investment, market requirements, and the biological capacity of the actual species of fish.
Tēnā koe. Just finally, who did name the inter-island ferries Cook and Kupe, and what do you make of the decision?
Well, us Ngāpuis, we all whakapapa back to Kupe. His marae there is at Pākanai. Then there's the Kupe tradition in Ngāti Kahu. Then there's the Kupe tradition up in Ngāti Kuri. Te Rākau Tukaha is the name of Great Exhibition Bay. Now, Great Exhibition Bay got that Pākehā name when Queen Victoria's husband created Crystal Palace and had a great thing called the Great Exhibition. I think it was in the 1850s. And we sent over gold, coal, and I think some manatungas, some tongas from the Ngāti Porou and the southern tribes, I think. But that's an indication of how names change. But Te Rākau Tukaha goes back to Kupe chasing an octopus. I think that's the tradition.
Mm.
And he wounded the octopus, and tu means to be wounded. Yeah.
Well, that's good. But I mean, who's this Cook bloke then?
Captain Cook.
Hey.
Now, you have got to stop denying your own history, Dale. Look, stop the self-loathing. As the New Zealander, you should be conscious that he was a great mariner, a great navigator. I mean, a lot of you Māori broadcasters, you've got to stop the self-loathing you have.
Come on, hey, keep a good sense of humour there. I do know who Cook is. Hey?